listening to the iHeartRadio Talk Network, and this is the Evan Solomon Show.
What's going on, Canada? Not the dulcet tones of one Evan Solomon. This is Zane Belcher here coming to you, filling in for Evan Solomon for the next couple of weeks. Looking forward to it, guys. This will be a fun couple of weeks. Fun show today, by the way, as well. I'll walk you through everything we've got going on in a second, but let me just quickly introduce myself as I will hopefully become a familiar voice for you over the course of the next couple of weeks. Zane Veldry coming to you from beautiful Calgary, Alberta, smoky Calgary, Alberta, campaign strategist, political commentator, and your host for the next couple of weeks as we talk about summer, as we talk about politics, as we talk about pop culture, tech, everything under the sun. It is a pleasure to be here with you, and I'm looking forward to chatting with you and having this conversation, extending from Evan to me over the course of the next couple of weeks. And of course, Evan will be back there on after to cover all things, politics, all things culture, all things leading up to, of course, our federal election that we expect. A great show for you today. So many things to talk about. I want to talk to my friend Clive Veroni at the bottom of this hour. We're going to talk about the Olympics. You know, yes, there's stories about COVID in the Olympics, and there's stories about the athletes and their safety and their training. And, you know, I know there'll be stories about the glory that are the Olympics and the medals awarded. But I want to talk to Clive about the brand of the Olympics. Not very popular right now, especially if you are in Japan. The Olympics, have something like 20% support in Japan. If you live in Tokyo, only 2 out of 10 people want these games to continue. And that sort of mindset and that opinion seems to be perpetuating beyond Tokyo, beyond Japan, even for some here domestically who worry about the safety. So I'm going to talk a bit about the COVID protocols, a bit about the safety and what that means. But these games are going ahead. These games are happening. I want to talk to Clive Veroni about the brand of the Olympics. Will this year irreparably damage the brand? Or is that to be determined? Because we're seeing things like sponsors pulling out. This is going to be a story as we lead up to the opening ceremonies coming here very, very shortly. Also, 1:30 Eastern today, we're expecting a big, big announcement. One with ramifications and impacts on all of us, because it's going to be about borders. The government of Canada is doing an announcement at 1:30. When will our borders be open to international tourists? Will they be open for the U.S.-Canada travel that we've been long speculating, especially land travel? You know, a lot of pressure being put on our government, especially by politicians in the U.S. and especially by politicians in Montana and Windsor and Detroit and other places, pushing to say, open these borders up. We need to ensure that the flow of people and the flow of dollars, just be honest, the flow of people and the flow of dollars starts happening this summer when people are optimistic about the future, optimistic about their spending. So we're expecting an announcement at 1:30 p.m. Eastern. We'll bring you the latest details here on the Evan Solomon Show. We'll break it down as we have those details. We're expecting that big announcement on Canada's borders. But let me begin today's show with something else closer to home. As I mentioned off the top, I'm here in beautiful Calgary, Alberta. This has been my home for the last 30 some odd years. If you're counting, that is 30 some odd years of me being born here in Calgary, Alberta. But this has been my home. And for the longest time, our city here has been defined by one thing. And if you are not from Calgary or have never visited, don't tune out, because I want to tell you about the one thing you probably know about my city. That's the Calgary Stampede. And the Calgary Stampede just wrapped up this weekend. And listen, the Calgary Stampede for the last half decade has become increasingly more divisive, right? You've probably seen the headlines of horses dying in the debates around animal rights, the calls for the Stampede to cancel their chuck wagon races. But the Stampede this year, as we start trickling to the end of this pandemic, not the end, but start getting there, the Stampede played a very different role, perhaps a national role, of trying to symbolize and trying to signal what it would look like if we, in this country, started holding mass events again. And the Stampede was kind of a little bit of a petri dish, maybe a bit of a case study. And that case study wrapped up yesterday. because yesterday was the final day of the 10-day Calgary Stampede. And while we don't know everything, i.e. the financials and the numbers related to how successful the Stampede was, I think there's a few things that we have learned. And let me tell you about some of the learnings I think that Calgary and perhaps the Calgary Stampede could provide. The first learning was that attendance was down a lot, more than 60% down. And before I jump into this, let me tell you something. I have been a lifelong fan of the Calgary Stampede. If you actually Google my name, which I would suggest you do simply so my Google search results can be higher on the trend analysis. No, but if you Google my name and you go to the image section, you will find pictures of me talking about Stampede events and cowboy gear. I have loved every part of the Stampede that this city has had to offer. Namely, what I've loved is how the Stampede has made, you know, at least a decade ago, overtures to communities to try to make it more open, to try to make it more accessible, to make this cowboy culture more representative of the diversity of our city. So what I'm about to say right now is not an insult to the Calgary Stampede, but I think is a lesson to the moment we're in. So first of all, attendance was down at the Calgary Stampede by more than 60%. And that included the fact that the Stampede was trying desperately to get many people through the doors, as many people as possible. They had free tickets available. In fact, yesterday, if you wanted to go yesterday, where our air quality was on a 10, which is the highest and poorest level of air quality that you can have on that scale, you could get in for free. They were trying to give away tickets to all young people. Anyone who did not have the ability to celebrate a grad, come on down, tickets on us. Despite all the overtures to try to get free tickets out the door, people through the gates so that they could consume beer, alcohol, go to the vendors, ticket sales still down 60%. And at the end of the day, you know, we still know that ticket sales for some of the big grandstand shows, which we still don't know, but anecdotally were down significantly as well. And I think this conversation of where the Calgary Stampede stands is a tough one, because for the longest time, there have been calls for the Calgary Stampede to abandon the chuck wagon races, as I mentioned, to get rid of certain practices, to try to lean more into accessibility. But I think this year, unfortunately or fortunately, for many people, the Stampede leaned into one final thing, which was the political polarization. The Stampede this year became a prop, or made itself one, unfortunately, for a government here in Alberta that wanted to open and perhaps use the Calgary Stampede as a symbol of that opening. And what we saw was that while a small minority of people still celebrated and tried to pretend like things were normal, ticket sales were down. More people than ever before were speaking ill of the Calgary Stampede, that this event, which is supposed to be a bridge to inclusivity, which is supposed to take cowboy culture and increase its proverbial blast zone so that more people are inundated by those values of meritocracy and community-mindedness and that spirit, which I think is so germane to our city, I think is finally facing its fracture. It's finally facing its perhaps long-term demise. Leaning in very simply to the conversation we're going to have next with Clive Verone on the Olympics. So a lesson to be learned here in Calgary is that at some point, your brand starts and your brand value starts to diminish. And unfortunately for the Calgary Stampede, that happened this year. I truly believe that because of the polarization that we've seen in our politics, because the Stampede was trying to be used as a prop, that this year the Calgary Stampede may have suffered some irrefutable and perhaps irreparable brand damage. Which is why I want to talk to Clive Verone on the other side of this break. I want to talk to him about brand. He's a marketing expert who knows what brands are supposed to do, what brand value is, and how brand value can erode. And we'll take this example of the Calgary Stampede that hopefully provides a lesson, report it to the other side of the world, and talk about Tokyo 2020. We'll talk about what that means and the brand value on the other side with Clive Verone.
Helping you through these unique times. This is the Evan Solomon Show.
What's going on? Zane Belge sitting in for Evan Solomon. You know, I was talking before the break off the top of the show about the Calgary Stampede, how this year, you know, because of the polarization, because of the stress test, the litmus test, I would say, that the Stampede was for holding mass events. We've seen 60% attendance declines if you missed the headline, that it could be a sign for irrefutable and irreparable brand damage for the Calgary Stampede. For those that would look at it and say, why did you do it this year? You know, did you do it simply for the money? Were you looking at any of the health consequences? Only one of the tents in the Stampede actually had any sort of pre-COVID testing related to it or proof of vaccination, so to speak. But I want to kind of take that mindset and shift it to Tokyo 2020, the upcoming Olympics. You know, there's something that those of us who are familiar in the event space, you ever hosted an event or ever gone out to solicit sponsors, which is very tough, that you will know perhaps this term or this move that sponsors sometimes do when they're a little bit unsatisfied or a little bit uncomfortable. It's called the partial pullout. They won't rescind their sponsorship completely, but they'll say that one element of it they won't participate in. And we saw that with the Calgary Stampede. Many of its major sponsors still saying, you know, keep the money, but we don't want our brand associated with this. And if we make that parallel to what's happening in Tokyo, well, guess what? Toyota has pulled the games-related TV ads and have also said they're not going to send a representative to the opening ceremonies. Now, why is this significant? Well, it's significant because Toyota is one of the largest sponsors. In fact, they signed an 8-year, $1 billion deal with the Olympics. Now, they're saying they're still going to support the athletes that are Toyota sponsors, the over 200 of them that are Toyota sponsored. But you know those TV ads that are going to really inextricably tie Toyota to the Olympics? Not going to do that. You know where we're going to send that representative, that CEO to show up to the opening ceremonies? Not going to do that. So they're clearly sending a message to the Olympics, which kind of opens up the question, especially on the heels of American gymnasts who are tested positive for COVID at the Olympic Village. It opens up the question of brand and brand reputation and what that means for the Olympics. And for that, I'm bringing on Clive Veroni. He's a marketing expert. He's the author of Spin, Politics and Marketing in a Divided Age. He's one of the best marketing minds, the best strategy minds that I've met in this country. Clive, thanks for coming back.
Thanks, Zane. Good to be with you.
So, Clive, tell me this. You know, last time you were on the show, you kind of set me straight, and I like that sort of elements of our relationship. So set me straight here, because I'm leading down the path to say that even before a single sort of a gun has gone off or a single event has started for Tokyo 2020, that they might be on the path of irreparable or permanent sort of brand damage here. Top line, would you agree with that sentiment, or am I overreaching significantly?
You'll be happy to know, Zane, that this time I agree with you. I do think that this is a serious brand challenge. You know, typically in these situations, there are two ways in which, the C-suite, the senior executives in a company analyze a problem like this. The first is to look at it from an ROI perspective, return on investment. So I've invested $1 billion, so over mm-hmm. 8 years, so that's basically $500 million for each Olympics. And how am I maximizing the return on that investment? Am I doing everything I can to maximize the return on investment? That's one way of looking at this problem. The second way of looking at it is to flip that lens around and step out of the boardroom and say, how are my customers looking at this issue? And if I was to evaluate the two brands involved here, one is the IOC and the other is Toyota, the IOC has clearly taken path one, which is simply, you know, we need to make some bucks. We're going to do whatever to make that money. We're going to just plow ahead with these games, despite a lot of opposition from a lot of people inside Japan particularly. And the folks at Toyota have taken the other route. They've said, what's it going to do to my brand long term? What's it going to do to my customer relationships if I proceed to hold a party, essentially, in the middle of a wake? And, you know, that doesn't work. That only works in Ireland, by the way, where the difference between a party and a wake is, you know, indistinguishable. Toyota has made this decision based on that calculation, and I think it's the right decision.
So what I'm hearing you say, Clive, is that Ireland should be bidding for all future Olympics, so to speak, summer and winter. You guys build the facilities, we'll come there every single cycle. But your point is well taken here, right? Which is to say that the two lenses that they've taken, Toyota, a massive company that clearly cares about its future reputation, that the IOC partnership is not its only sort of vertical to get messaging and brand out there, but they have to be extremely sensitive. You know, one viral campaign against them puts them in a position to really suffer more than the $1 billion that they've invested in their sponsorship. So I guess the question I'd have for you, Clive, is twofold. And let me start with this first one, which is, what would you advise other sponsors if you were, you know, and I hate to kind of make you give free advice over the air, but you know, let's do the exercise if you don't mind. If you're advising, you know, one of the larger sponsors about Tokyo 2020, from everything you're seeing and perhaps even feeling heading into Friday's opening ceremonies, what advice would you be giving them regarding their contribution and their sponsorship for these Tokyo 2020 games?
I think they should be looking at Toyota, because Toyota is the largest Japanese sponsor of the Olympics. It will lead the conversation. It will lead the the analysis, and people should be taking their lead. And major Japanese executives are all sort of lining up on the same side of this issue. The billionaire founder of SoftBank has criticized the fact that they're holding the games. The CEO of Rakuten called it a suicide mission. The Asahi newspaper, the major newspaper in Japan, which is itself a sponsor, wrote an editorial saying, cancel the games.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's not like you're stepping out on a limb if you're a sponsor and you're saying, you know, we really need to pull back. There is anger on the streets of Japan. There is fear, and there is a lot of anxiety. And what is the point of trying to, as I say, hold a birthday party in the middle of this sort of crisis? It's only going to antagonize people. And by the way, the companies that are doing, are taking actions like Toyota, they understand a simple lesson of business, which is if a customer has a really lousy customer experience with you, there's always the chance you'll lose that customer. But a lousy customer experience can be turned into customer loyalty if you respond the right way. You can actually have that customer be more loyal to you after a bad experience by responding in the right way. And that is what Toyota is doing here.
Clive, I've got 30 seconds with you, but I want to quickly impress on this question of what the IOC can do. I understand their imperative to make the money. Is there anything they can do on the back end to try to, okay, saying we had to do this to try to scaffold and repair or perhaps prevent further harm to their brand?
You know what the IOC reminds me of is the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. The
yes,
guys who run the Golden Globes. It's like a group of marginal characters. Nobody knows who they are, making questionable decisions all day long. And what happened to the Golden Globes? NBC announced a few months ago they will no longer be broadcasting the Golden Globes. I think the IOC is in danger of doing serious harm to its brand, and they need to step back. And just as by the way, the Hollywood Foreign Press Association is doing, we're going to totally rethink our organization, how it's structured and what it does. The IOC needs to do the same thing.
Clive Verone, marketing expert and author of Spin, Politics and Marketing in a Divided Age. Clive, thank you so much. On the other side of the break, I want to hear from you. Will the Olympics brand be permanently damaged after this year? Give me a call, 1-855-633-1010, or text me at 71010. This is Zane Velji filling in for Evan Solomon on the iHeartRadio Talk Network. We'll see you on the other side.
From coast to coast to coast, the newsmakers talk here. This is the Evan Solomon Show.
What's going on? Zane Belger here with you, filling in for Evan Solomon today and the rest of the week and next week as well. We're talking Olympics. Well, we're talking Olympic brand, you know, and I want to hear from you. I'll give you the number first and I'll get into it. 1-855-633-1010 or text me at 71010. Will the Olympics brand be permanently damaged after this year? If you're just catching up, tons of concern, tons of speculation that the Olympics aren't safe. They've done a few things, right? They've got their measures in place to ensure that everyone is tested. Once they, you know, leave the airport, they get there, they're tested off the plane, they get tested every day. Appreciate that. No fans? Appreciate that. The games are going ahead with only 20% approval of folks in Japan. And now we're seeing, you know, the next cycle or the next additive to this, which is sponsors. Sponsors doing what I call the partial pullout. Toyota starting and saying, listen, we'll still support the athletes because that's why we're here. We care for the athletes, blah, blah, blah. The stuff that gives us the brand equity and the brand value. We'll still support the athletes. But as it relates to putting on those TV commercials, you know, the ones where we throw them on the air and it's a Toyota logo followed by the Olympics logo inextricably linked. Yeah, we're not going to do that. Too risky this year. Not the right move. Too much brand risk. Too much downside. And so the question I have for you is, you know, will the Olympics brand, very strong, robust, you know, it's met with some ebb and flows, but relatively well-known, strong, robust, international. I mean, very few that you could say all of those things about. Will that brand be permanently damaged after this year? Text me at 71010 or give me a shout at 1-855-633-1010. Here's my take. I think for me, this is a very simple one, which is, this is one of those classic cases of doubling down. If you love the Olympics, you're going to try to do everything you can to defend them. You're going to try to do, and I'm sure this is part of the IOC and the Olympic Committee strategy. They're going to try to do anything they can to ensure that that wash that we have over us of Olympic glory, of national anthems from the podium, of record-breaking performances, of remarkable athleticism are the story. That sounds painfully simple, but that story is actually an emotional story. And so if you're already part of the Olympics, if you're part of that cohort, if you're someone who's like, you know, this needs to go ahead no matter what, I think the IOC is in that boat with you because they're going to try to make this an emotional story of feeling, of what the games made you feel, and that wash is perhaps what comes over you. If you're against the Olympics, you're always a little bit skeptical. You were always a little bit nervous about who is this, as Clive before the break, our guest mentioned, you know, as someone mentioned, as this is a institution with characters that are nameless and faceless. If you're already skeptical, you're going to double down on that skepticism, and this might be that final straw. And so I think what this year does is just make that cleavage, that fracture of those who care about the Olympics and like them and value them and those who don't even deeper. And the question is, which side will get louder? Tom, I have your take on the other side of the phone line. Tom, what's up? Give me your take on the Olympics. Will this damage, this year, I should say, damage the Olympics brand permanently?
I don't think so. I used to sell advertising, actually, for television, and the Olympics was always a hot commodity. So if you're sponsoring the Olympics and you have your advertising in there and out there, who are you going to affect? The people that are watching it. So it will help your brand in my mind. The people that are not going to watch it, you can put whatever advertising you want on there. You know, anyone can sponsor it and they won't get it anyways. So who cares about those people? It's the people that are invested and watch it and root for their country that you want to hit.
And Tom, if I can stick with you for a second, do you feel like that pool of people might eventually just get smaller and smaller for the Olympics to market to?
I think that's a really tough question because I think the Olympics now might start going into gaming. Wouldn't surprise me at all. And that if they change sports up, like golf now is back, And if they start adding things like gaming, that is going to be a humongous pool of millennials and 20-some-year-olds and stuff. So they sort of have to shift with the times. If they don't shift with the times, then I think they will be a dinosaur.
Appreciate it, Tom. Thanks for your take. You know, I one thing I failed to mention off the top is I'm willing to have my mind changed on issues. You know, I come in hot here with Clive saying, listen, I think this is permanent damage, as I do think it was with our Calgary Stampede from where I sit here in Calgary. I feel like the Olympics might be on that path. But then a refreshing take like Tom's, which says, listen, they'll ride this out. They have a very narrow audience. That's all that matters. And if they can market to that narrow audience, you know, and perhaps use, to paraphrase Tom, other measures to expand their brand profile, gaming, you know, all these other elements of different areas to market, they just ride this one out. Getting some interesting texts from you as well. The people that run the Olympics are not worried about anything but themselves. Also hearing that we're deeply in debt. Why are we participating in the Olympics? It makes millionaires of many on the backs of taxpayers. Well, that argument is quite literally the one that I hear here in Calgary all the time. As many of you might be aware, we in our city tried to bid for the Olympics for the Winter Games in 2024. Very similar argument on our plebiscite that won over the day for the no vote. Joe, I have you on the line. Joe, you feel like they should have canceled these games. You know, they have delayed them by a year, but you feel like they should have canceled. Give me more on your take.
Well, you know, honestly, it's very sad that they probably, you know, should have canceled it due to the fact that, you know, they're really going to tarnish the Olympic spirit and so on. You know, I enjoy watching the Olympics and I look forward to it. But I think it's a question of money. These people, the IOC, doesn't want to cancel simply because it's billions of dollars goes into, you know, to putting this on, you know, from buildings to, you know, to having it preparation for this thing. You know, they already canceled it last year. And I think this year, no matter what the conditions were, they were going to proceed. You know, I think, you know, it's a question of money, but at the same token, a lot of people are already getting sick, and it's sad because it really is going to tarnish the Olympic symbol and the Olympic, situation there. But anyway, what can I say?
Thanks for your take, Joe. Really appreciate that. Ron, I have used maybe very similar to Tom here, feeling that this may not cause long-term damage. Tell me more.
Well, media, and I'm not saying media is right or wrong, I'm just saying the information we're presented with, and I look at things like, well, SNC-Lavalin with Trudeau, like it was, whoa, big deal, and now a year later or 2 years later, it's like, whatever. I find that people are impacted intensely by things like the Aboriginal schooling. That hurt all of us to the core, and that's going to stay with us. But many of the things that come up, you could take any news item from today and put it into your discussion today, and it's big deal. Like, you know, it's big today, it's gone tomorrow. So I think on this type of thing, it's not going to make a world of difference in the next month or year because it doesn't impact people's lives. Many people on many topics, they have, it's called the Yabbit syndrome. Yeah, but, you know, if they did this, or yeah, but they always quantify a way to get out. You can't do that with the Aboriginal schooling because nobody's going to say, yeah, but maybe they had a reason. So on something like this, it's almost benign. It's a Yabbit moment. So that people can go in and say, I feel strongly about this today. Yeah, but tomorrow, whatever. They may all.
Yeah, I appreciate the take, Ron. I got to run here, but appreciate your comment. It's a fascinating one. You know, it's one of those things where the long-term damage may not be known until on the back end of this, but Ron makes a good point, right? We have this Olympics that is in the zeitgeist on top of mind right now. People could jump in and out of it if they care, but their intensity or their factor of changing may not. On the other side of the break, I'm going to talk to you about a horror story happening here in Alberta. See you on the other side.
Sorting through the changes. Here's Evan Solomon.
You hear that? See, that's the ever so calming sound of grasshoppers. Yeah, that's right. You see, grasshoppers probably not used as the most calming auditory stimulation, so to speak. They perhaps probably evoke a sense of horror. And that's exactly what they're doing in Alberta. Yes, my home province of Alberta. If you go further south to a city named Lethbridge, that is exactly what they're doing, because they are taking over at least one resident's backyard, as if it were a horror movie. I'm joined by Paige Thornborough, who's a resident in Copperwood in West Lethbridge. You know, Paige, I could explain this story away, but how about I have you and your enthusiasm tell me how it's a horror movie in a town just a couple hours, or a city, I should say, just a couple hours away from me here in Calgary.
I don't know if enthusiasm, perhaps, is the word that I would use, but... yeah, things are definitely, as you mentioned, a bit of a horror show down here in Lethbridge. Our grass, to paint a very disgusting picture, sort of looks like an ocean, like with currents in it. Essentially, our grass is moving. It's alive with grasshoppers. They're crawling, you know, up our siding. They're falling from, you know, our pergola. It is disgusting.
So tell me this, Paige, you know, and I want to get into the why for a second, but is this just your home, or is this like an infestation that your neighbors and those around you are also dealing with?
Yeah, it's pretty much, we live in, I'd argue, one of the, you know, the most beautiful places in Lethbridge in terms of our view. We back onto a nice farmer's field. We have the mountains in the distance, but we are paying the price, everyone on our street, for that lovely view lately. It's pretty much all of the houses that back onto the farmer's fields are, you know, just dealing with a nightmare right now in terms of thousands of grasshoppers, or sort of our whole block there.
Yeah, and you know, as much as you and I are having a bit of a laugh about it, there is a root cause that we suspect is behind this. And unsurprisingly, to those that are listening, it's more than likely the dry and hot sort of conditions, perhaps unprecedented hot conditions that we are facing, not just in our province, but right across the country. Is that what your understanding is too, that's the cause behind this infestation of grasshoppers?
Mm-hmm. Pretty much, I think, from what we've gathered from, you know, talking to neighbors who know the farmers, you know how small towns are. Basically, we've found out that it was just so darn dry this year that the farmers who, you know, own the field right behind our house didn't spray the field at all for the first time since we've lived here. So because they didn't do any of the spraying, you know, all those grasshoppers survived and they're sort of migrating inward. So, and I think that's why, you know, we haven't had any issues so far, because yeah, this is the first year where it's just been so darn dry that the farmers are really struggling too.
Yeah. It's wild. You know, we talk about the smoke. We talk about, you know, previously on this show, if you're a listener, you've heard about just the harrowing story of the crabs and crustaceans and sea life on the West Coast effectively boiling because of the situation related to our weather patterns here in Canada. We've also learned, and we'll talk more about this week, just the unbelievable stories from farmland, where, as you were just mentioning, Paige, you know, farmers who are putting out cherries, they're just burning outright like never before. And of course, you know, situations like this, you know, Paige, tell me this, what is the impact, you know, outside maybe slightly jokingly, but like, what has the impact been on your life there for kids, for the family trying to enjoy some of this summer weather? What's it been like, and how difficult has it been to navigate?
Yeah, you know, we always preach to our kids, you know, when we go outside, you know, like we're in nature, you know, there's going to be lots of bugs. We need to, you know, respect their space. So we feel a little bit, you know, hypocritical in some of the, I guess, whining that we've been doing about these grasshoppers. But at the end of the day, it's really affecting, and again, it sounds kind of silly to say, but it's really affecting our overall quality of life. You know, we're not able to utilize our backyard, and you know, for those of you that have, you know, young kids, like that's their favorite place to be, you know, they're on their swing sets playing soccer, and it's really unfortunate, you know, that they're not able to utilize any of that space, and we're not able to, you know, give them that, you know, run free in the backyard sort of thing anymore. And, you know, for my husband and I, obviously we'd like to be barbecuing and, you know, having a cocktail on the patio, but it's really the kids that, you know, our two young daughters that are taking the brunt of it, because they've just lost sort of, especially in the middle of, you know, a pandemic, that's sort of been their lifeline in terms of getting out there and exploring. So it's definitely, you know, we're laughing about it. We're trying to find the humor in it. But at the end of the day, it is pretty brutal in terms of its impact on our family and, yeah, and you know, the neighbors as well, everyone.
Oh, I can only imagine. You know, and I use that term upfront, enthusiasm, because I read your remarks that you're given to CC, and you were laughing about it, or you called it a horror show. And I have to say, on a personal, I just appreciate your you know, you taking this in stride, because, you know, when you just mentioned your kids going through a pandemic, that's the main sort of emotional heartstring that tugs at me, right? Which is, and I'm sure for many, which is that, you know, they've had to go through an unprecedented year at such a young age, probably had to, you know, knowing Alberta, as we are both sort of residents of this province, knowing the in and outs of going through to school, out of school, you know, maybe not seeing friends. One element of normalcy that remains, and even that kind of gets robbed away in some point. So I just, on a personal level, wanted to say, you know, I appreciate your sort of disposition on something like this, because seeing the pictures and seeing how harrowing it is, I know people could have a very different outlook on a situation like this.
Well, that's very sweet of you. We try and take everything, you know, as, you know, as parents, as a bit of a teaching moment. And, you know, we're using it to this whole situation to, you know, have conversations, even though, you know, they're 3 and 6, using it as a platform to have conversations about things, you know, like climate change. And I think it's a really good gateway to other really big topics out there. So everything's all about learning. And like you said, just taking it in stride.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love that and admire it, to be honest. Paige, before you go, what's next here? Does the city know that this is a situation? Are they trying to resolve it? Or is this just one of those things where it just has to cool down and they leave? I've got about 30 seconds here. So what's the next step? Is the city just intervening or not so much?
So we're trying really hard. You know, I think the city's got, you know, their hands up in the air a little bit in terms of, we don't really know what we can do, like what options there are out there. So right now we're just sort of crossing our fingers for a really cold, cold winter. And hopefully maybe next summer we'll be a little bit better.
Paige Thornbro, thank you for your time. Appreciate the conversation. And just appreciate the disposition you have on this to make it a teachable moment about something so much more impactful and significant for you and your family. So thank you so much. On the other side of this break, when we come back on the top of the hour, I should say at 1:30 Eastern, we're expecting that big announcement from the federal government. So we're expecting that to come at 1:30 Eastern. Stay tuned here on the Evan Solomon Show. We'll walk you through what the big decisions are as related to border openings, as related to travel restrictions, that big, big announcement coming to us at 1:30 p.m. Eastern. On the other side of the break, though, I'm going to ask you, should complaining or gossiping about your boss or coworkers be a fireable offense? See you on the other side. Zane Belge filling in for Evan Solomon.
You're listening to the iHeartRadio Talk Network, and this is the Evan Solomon Show.
Hey, what's going on, Canada? Zane Belge sitting in for Evan Solomon. Hope you're having a good day. Hope you're having a good Monday. You know, just less than 30 minutes from now, in fact, we're expecting a big announcement from the federal government on reopening Canada's borders. When will our borders reopen to international tourists? That question might be answered. And when will the U.S.-Canada land border finally open? You know, that one's been one for a long time that our friends in the United States have been beating the drum on. To open up, to let them in, to let that flow happen over the land border so we can have both the movement of people and, let's be clear, money simultaneously as well. So we might get some answers to that less than 30 minutes from now. At the bottom of this hour, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, we are expecting an announcement from the federal government. Stay tuned to this program, because we will cover those big details and bring you the latest on the Evan Solomon Show here But for now, I want to talk about something else. I want to take a little bit of a shift. I want to talk about your workplace. And as a lot of us get back to the workplace physically, a lot of us maybe begrudgingly back to the workplace is a topic I like to hit on every now and then. But listen, I want to take a slightly different approach, mainly because as we have used, a lot of us, I should say, electronic communications to stay in touch with work, that might be Slack or email or text messaging, a lot of us kind of using these platforms that might not be entirely secure, entirely within our control. The reason I bring that up is because three employees at Netflix, yes, that Netflix, have gotten fired because of a discovery of them trading messages with each other, criticizing their bosses. So they've been venting about their bosses with their colleagues, and because of that, they got fired. In fact, their bosses, when they found out, did not want to fire them. They were fine with it. They felt like it would send the wrong message. But their bosses, the boss's boss, everyone's got one of those, said, no, we at Netflix have a culture of radical candor and radical transparency, which means that every time we find something or something is brought to our attention that may have been said privately or secretly or whatnot about someone else, we bring it out to the open and we stress test it and say, if this was said to someone's face, would it be a fireable offense? And in this case, they said, yes, it would be. So the question I have for you, I want to get your thoughts on this. I'll give you the number. 1-855-633-1010 or text me at 71010. Is should complaining or gossiping about your boss or coworkers be a fireable offense? Should something that I suspect 98% of us do, complaining or gossiping about our boss or coworkers, be a fireable offense? Let me know what you think. 1-855-633-1010 or text me at 71010. This is an interesting one because the power dynamics are what make this interesting, especially if it's your boss. You know, the modern workplace, wherever you work, you might be listening to this in an office or on a site somewhere or on your way to work. You might be working out of the car. That might be your sort of jam. But the modern work life isn't easy. The modern work life demands more. How many of us have been asked to stay longer hours, to do more unpaid work, to go that extra mile, to almost be put into this comparison with our colleagues and our workmates in a pseudo-competitive environment to just squeeze more out of us? And for so many of us, the ability to vent with our coworkers kind of relieves some of that stress. Now, on the other hand, some might say, no, we don't want a culture of gossip. We don't want a culture of backbiting. We don't want a culture of venting. That's not what we do here. That's what Netflix said, that venting your frustrations with colleagues, yeah, it's a common way to deal with stress. Yeah, it's a common way to deal with the camaraderie element or kind of build a sense of bond. But left unchecked, it can lead to an entire workplace of cliques, paranoia, and mean-spiritedness. We don't want that. So the question is this too much of an ask for human beings to say, you know, no, you can't do this? You know, is this too much of a too high of a bar to say, no, you don't vocalize the beefs you have with your boss or your coworkers, even with your colleagues? You don't do that here. So the question I have back to you, very simply, should complaining or gossiping about your boss or coworkers be a fireable offense? Give me a call at 1-855-633-1010 or text me at 71010. Tammy, I have you on the other line here. What is your take? Should employees be fired for gossiping or complaining about their boss at work?
I definitely think so, because, I mean, you can't go around bringing the morale of the companies down. If you don't like to work there, you have a complaint, you bring it to your superior, if it's a legitimate complaint, bring it to your superior and then talk about it privately in that situation. And it's the same as talking about your, you know, your comrades at work. Like, you can't just go around disrupting someone's life, and because, you know what, you start that little fire and it just burns and burns, and it, before you know it, you've got this big explosion going on, and companies can't do productive work in that situation. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, and I appreciate your take, Tammy. Solid take. You know, Tammy makes a very good point here, right? And I think it's one that the folks at Netflix were trying to make too, which is, if you start breeding or allowing this culture in some way, first of all, if you find out that it's happening and then you allow it, it kind of forms these cliques. It kind of forms these small little tribes at work where people view other people in a certain way, regardless of what they do. Can we relate to that? I'm sure we can, right? John always does this. Even though John's not doing that, it's because you formed an emotional opinion about John, and that's what is now socialized. And that's what's now common amongst that cohort or that clique at work. We do this all the time. So Tammy's point kind of speaks to that, which is nip it at the butt. We're not doing it. At the same time, I'm getting some texts here saying, no, they should not be fired. Their bosses were not offended. Also getting another text here saying, you know, not letting subordinates complain in a professional setting is what sets a bad culture, not the other way around. Not letting them vent and complain and talk to each other and work out their frustrations as perhaps even a form of catharsis. That's what maybe sets the bad culture. We're getting that take as well. Let me take another call here. I got Baker. Baker, what do you think? Should they be fired or should there be some slack here for these employees?
Well, absolutely not. No, if I'm the boss and I have somebody who's mealy-mouthing me behind my back and they don't have balls enough to bring it up to me in my face, I don't want them working for me or representing my company. It's plain and simple. It's cut and dried. You are an employee. I am your boss. Period. Deal with it. Get out. Grow some or get out.
Appreciate your take, Baker. To the point, direct. And listen, I think that's a take that I think many in a position of authority might take. Now, what's interesting and perhaps a bit nuanced about this situation is that the direct reports, the bosses of these individuals said, no, I don't want these people fired. That doesn't make sense. But it was the company policy, this radical transparency, this culture of, you know, we need to unearth it and we need to deal with it as if it was said to someone's face. That's what got these individuals fired. Getting another texture, gossip is a fundamental tool of human society. I would argue it brings some people together. Netflix is creating a totalitarian environment where discourse isn't accepted. Oh, I like this. We're getting some diverse takes here. You know, I'm going to stick with this on the other side of the break. I want to hear from you. Give me a call at 1-855-633-1010 or text me at 71010. Should complaining or gossiping about your boss or coworkers be a fireable offense? I want to get your take on the other side. This is Zane Zilge filling in for Evan Solomon on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Making sense of the latest news. You're listening to The Evan Solomon Show.
Zane Belger here, sitting in for Evan Solomon. Hope you're doing well, Canada. Hope you're having a good Monday. We're talking gossiping at work. Why not? Why not? We're talking about three employees at Netflix that got the can. Not because their bosses, but their bosses' bosses said, no, gossiping at work about your boss, not a thing we do. In fact, at Netflix, it's tantamount, I'm quoting here, to being disloyal to the company if you fail to speak up when you disagree with a colleague or have feedback that could be helpful. So when you say it behind their back, you're gone. And I'm taking your calls, 1-855-633-1010, or you're texting me at 71010. Should complaining or gossiping about your boss or coworkers be a fireable offense? Greg, I have you on the line. What's your take, Greg?
Yeah, no, it shouldn't be. And there seems to be a totalitarian Marxist mindset that seems to be creeping into certain facets of our democratic society lately. I still prefer, by far, freedom of speech and expression. Years ago, I owned and operated a business. And when I caught wind of employees complaining, I wouldn't have a knee-jerk reaction to absolutely always fire someone. It was sit down, let's talk about what the issues are, because as a business owner and a boss, I have to know that I'm not always going to make the right decisions. And if certain portions of my employees are complaining, maybe the problem's me. Maybe I need to make an adjustment for the betterment of my business to get the best out of my employees. That's how I went about it, to go through that process. But it seems that people don't tolerate a lot anymore, and it kind of concerns me a bit when we're hearing things like this. It's a little bit worrisome in my point of view, anyways.
I appreciate the take, Greg.
Okay.
Really do. Thoughtful. Former boss who says, listen, I would take them aside. I would talk to them. I'd say what's going on. I try to use it as a learning exercise. I'd use it as an opportunity to learn what the issues are. And it's such a fine line here too, right? Because there's obviously the type of gossip, and we don't know what these three Netflix employees said about their bosses, by the way. I would read you that if I had it, because why not read the most salacious part about the story? But to Greg's point here, there's the element of it that's just gossip, and there's the other part of it that could be constructive, that someone just didn't feel like a culture was set by the boss to be able to speak to them directly. Give me your calls at 1-855-633-1010 or text me at 71010. Mike, I think you may not have a similar take. Lay it on me. What are you thinking, Mike?
I don't have a similar take, to be honest with you, but the point that I was actually going to make is I think there's a difference between complaining and gossiping. Complaining is definitely constructive. To complain, to try to make things better, absolutely. But to gossip, to talk about someone behind their back, I think it's actually detrimental, and I think that they should have been fired. At the end of the day, I live by a very simple rule. Work is work, and friends are friends. I save myself the trouble. I'm here to do my job. That's it.
I appreciate the take, Mike. And thank you for clearing out that definition, for adding some clarity that the conflation between the two probably isn't a great idea. It is interesting because when you have folks that are in this pressure cooker environment known as modern work, you kind of sympathize with them that, part of it is they probably don't want to bring up some of these things to their bosses because they're things maybe their bosses aren't changing. They haven't changed. Maybe that feedback has been given. I'm sure we can all recall a time where we get frustrated with our boss, mainly because their lack of action, that they've been told what you're gossiping about to another employee, but they just haven't acted. They haven't done it. So this blanket rule, at least to me, seems like a little bit of an overreach. Terry, what's going on? Terry, give me your take on should employees be let go, or should it be a fireable offense to complain or gossip about your boss or coworkers?
Well, I tell you, Greg stole a lot of my thunder. Greg did, but the worker boss, that's a relationship. You're doing a job for them. If you got a problem with it, have a meeting or something. But as for gossip, as for stuff saying that somebody's seeing somebody else or something like that, I think that's a firing offense.
I appreciate the take. I really do. Yeah. No, we're getting. I mean, I honestly thought this would go one way, folks. You guys have made me extend this to a second segment, i.e. this one. And this is very interesting because I think we're quite divided on this one. I'm getting a text here saying if everyone got fired for what they did or said about their boss behind their back, we would all be unemployed. Touche, Dylan. I hear you. Piero, I have you on the other line. What's your take?
Yeah, they want to adopt a policy of extreme transparency, but how hypocritical is that? There's certain things that you cannot say to each other. So much for transparency. Imagine, you need, like one of your previous callers said, you need to have the balls to confront your boss. But you know, how is that going to go now that people got fired for talking amongst themselves? Now you're gonna develop the courage, the balls to go speak to your boss? Kind of, I find that it's absolutely appalling what they did. I really do, absolutely appalling.
I appreciate the take, Piero. That's just it. You know, Piero makes a good point about the culture, right? What part of this is, you know, people relegated to this because it's a human behavior. This is what we all do. I think every corporation, regardless of how well it's run, probably has a few people gossiping about something, one thing or another, one element of their boss or their coworkers or something. But what part of this is systemic in a corporate culture, right? That now you've kind of actually harmed the situation. Cy, I've got you on the other line. What do you think, Cy?
I wanted to weigh in on this. I experienced this personally, and the result of it was that I resigned and retired because I had complained to my boss directly and his boss that nothing got done. And I was only looking out for my customer. I was in sales. Mm-hmm. And I think it makes sense that people complain because if you don't, the toxic environment just continues.
And Cy, if I can keep you for a second, you complained directly to your boss and your boss's boss. This was not you know, gossiping amongst your colleagues that then they caught wind of. This was you going directly.
I complained to both, and the response from my boss directly was, I will always be back. So don't waste your time.
I appreciate your thoughts and sharing that personal experience, Cy. I really do. Fascinating. You know, Cy kind of makes that point. You go to your bosses, right? You complain to them, complain to their bosses' bosses. And if nothing gets done, you got a choice. You could be like Cy and say, you know what? I'm leaving with my dignity. I'm leaving with the right thing that I need to do in hand and leaving this place, walking out the door. Or you found counsel, you find solace, you find a community, you find some bonding with your colleagues. And that's maybe where the gossip train starts. So it's really hard to know in these cases, what came first, this culture that you know, allowed this or that welcomed this in or not? Gary, I've got 30 seconds for you. Lay it on me, sir.
So I'm an employer, and I just actually had to get rid of a gentleman a couple of weeks ago because of, you know, a very bad attitude and constantly poisoning the rest of the people. Every day he was perpetually bitching and complaining about something. He was never happy. So, I mean, I took the time and pulled him aside and tried to deal with the situation and rectify it the best I could, you know, for any of the flaws I might have had. But ultimately, he just kept poisoning the crew. So I think there's got to be leeway both ways. I think that you can't just go around firing everybody because, again, you'll never have any employees. And we've all probably done it. But I think we need to, you know, try to get to the root of the problem, see if you can fix it. And if you can't, then maybe they do need to be let go.
I appreciate the take, Gary. Appreciate everyone's take on this fantastic topic. Just very divisive. Who knew? On the other side of this break, I want to talk about the federal government's big announcement. We're expecting it at the bottom of the hour. We'll have you all the details of the federal government's new borders announcement. When will the borders reopen internationally? What happens to our U.S.-Canada borders? We're expecting that announcement at the bottom of the hour, and we're expecting some answers to some of those questions. This is Zane Velji sitting in for Evan Solomon on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
As your world changes, we adapt to get your answers. Now more with Evan Solomon.
What's up, Canada? Zane Velger here. Not Evan Solomon, but Zane Velger sitting in for the great Evan Solomon. Hope you're having a great Monday. We expect a big announcement in the next couple of minutes here from the federal government on our borders. On our borders and our travel abilities. Well, mainly in terms of when our borders open, perhaps. Big conversations going on, frankly, across the world. And we're ready to talk about opening up again. You know, there's a rule in politics, and that rule in politics is very simple. If you want to get someone's endorsement, do you know what you do? You endorse them. And that's exactly what happened last week when we had France say, you know what, Canada, your borders are open to us. Now we hope you reciprocate. And that's exactly what the Americans are trying to do. And we now have, and we're now learning, that we have some breaking news. That is right. We are hearing, as we speak and as at this exact moment, the government of Canada is making their announcements on the borders. Now, what we know is that there has been tremendous pressure. I just talked about France. I just talked to you about our friends in the United States asking, wanting to open up our borders. When are we going to do it? Well, now we have a bit of clarity. We are understanding from the government of Canada, we're understanding that on September 7th, provided that our domestic situation remains favorable, i.e., the domestic epidemiological situation, so to speak, that the government intends to open Canada's borders to any fully vaccinated travelers who have completed the full course of vaccination with a Government of Canada accepted vaccine and at least 14 days prior to entering Canada and who meet specific entry requirements. So, September 7th, anyone from anywhere, if you're vaccinated, double doses of a Canada accepted vaccine, welcome. You're allowed. However, earlier than September 7th, August 9th, in a couple of weeks here, Canada plans to begin allowing entry to American citizens and permanent residents who are currently residing in the U.S. and have been fully vaccinated at least 14 days prior to entering Canada. So, August 9th, a couple weeks here, America, come on in. If you're double vaxxed, 14 days prior to, non-essential travel to Canada is open for you. Just a little less than a month later, September 7th, regardless of where you are in this country, in this world, I should say, you're welcome to come to this country. Two doses, fully approved vaccinations, 14 days prior to, come on in. The border is open. Takeaway here, August 9th, for our friends in the United States and our permanent residents residing in the U.S., and September 7th for any international travelers, double vaxxed 14 days prior to, welcome aboard. Welcome aboard to Canada. You know what? This is all, of course, subject to limited exceptions. All travelers must use the Arrive Can app. That's that, you know, that we're talking about vaccine passports more generally. This is the web portal where they'll have to submit all their information, and that will then effectively give them the ability to come into Canada. Transport Canada is expanding the scope of these existing notice to airmen measures that currently direct scheduled national international commercial flights, which means all that to say that outside of Montreal, Toronto, Calgary, and Vancouver, these flights of August 9th can now also land in Halifax, Quebec City, Ottawa, Winnipeg, and Edmonton. So breaking it down for you again here very, very quickly. August 9th, Americans, if you're double vaxxed, permanent residents live in America, you're double vaxxed 14 days prior to, come on in. September 7th, international travelers, double vaxxed 14 days prior to, come on in. And we're expanding the number of airports. So now it's not just Montreal Trudeau, Pearson, Calgary, and Vancouver. We're now also adding Halifax, Quebec City, Ottawa, and Winnipeg, and Edmonton. So expanding to five additional airports that you can now land in if you're coming to Canada from the U.S. or internationally. Here's a clip of Federal Health Minister Patty Hajdu, who's talking about the air travel and the new restriction and the new sort of process going forward.
On September 7th, we intend to allow entry for fully vaccinated travelers from any country for non-essential traveler. Travelers will have to be fully vaccinated with a Health Canada authorized vaccine at least 14 days prior to entering the country.
And here she is on U.S. travelers.
But ahead of that date, on August 9th, a number of important changes at the border will come into effect to allow fully vaccinated United States citizens and permanent residents who are currently residing in the United States to enter Canada for non-essential purposes. The same requirements will apply. Travelers will have to be fully vaccinated with the Health Canada authorized vaccine at least 14 days before entering the country.
There you have it from our Health Minister, Patty Hajdu, about the announcement from the government, what they are announcing. September 7th, international travelers double vaxxed. You can come on in. August 9th, U.S., you can come on in. Permanent residents, you can come on in. Now, we're hearing tons of questions around, is this applying to Canadians traveling to the U.S.? It does not. As of now, the Canada-U.S. border restrictions are set to last until July 21st. The U.S. has not announced when they'll be allowing Canadians to travel into their country. So that announcement, which I know many on this side of the border are keenly looking forward to saying whether that extension goes forward, whether it doesn't, you know, we do not know just yet. July 21st is the date, 2 days from now, where we know that the current set of restrictions are to last. We don't know, however, whether they'll be extended for their full cycle, a partial cycle, or dropped altogether. You know, we are hearing that officials on the tech briefing noted that the U.S. still hasn't said when they will start letting Canadians into the U.S. for discretionary or non-essential travel. So if you were looking for that in today's announcement, you don't have that. But what you do have is that on September 7th, international travelers, double vaxxed, welcome to Canada. August 9th, Americans and permanent residents, double vaxxed, 14 days prior, welcome to Canada. Of course, all of this subject to the Arrive Can app or web portal where folks will have to provide their information. And finally, I will repeat, there have been an expansion of airports. So not just Toronto, Calgary, Vancouver, and Montreal. We're now also adding Halifax, Quebec City, Ottawa, Winnipeg, and Edmonton, where those flights and those travelers starting August 9th can arrive. So still no clarity, as I should say, in terms of when the Canada-U.S. border restrictions are going to extend beyond the 21st, 2 days from now, whether they're going to be dropped, what that looks like. So officials in Canada still have not heard from their U.S. counterparts in terms of when the U.S. will start letting Canadians into the U.S. for discretionary travel. Hopefully today's announcement stimulates something. One can expect that the announcement made today, i.e. the 19th, 2 days before this renewal, probably has something to do with either the negotiations or the joint announcement or the U.S. and how they move through with their announcement, perhaps in the coming days. What we know now, August 9th, you're allowed in, and September 7th, if you're from the United States. And from there on in, September 7th, international travelers, you're allowed in as well. On the other side of this break, I want to get some reaction. I'm going to talk to Dan Kelly, president and CEO of the Canadian Federation of Independent Business. You know, a lot of non-discretionary travel is about business. What does this mean to those that have shops, stores, the flow of money? Is this enough? Dan Kelly on the other side. This is Zane Vilji filling in for Evan Solomon on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Finding answers to all your questions. You're listening to The Evan Solomon Show.
What's going on, Canada? Zane Vilji filling in for Evan Solomon. Just before the break, we had some breaking news by our federal government on some new policies for travel into Canada, not just yet out of Canada to the U.S., but into Canada. Here's Health Minister Patty Hajdu on international travel.
On September 7th, we intend to allow entry for fully vaccinated travelers from any country for non-essential traveler. Travelers will have to be fully vaccinated with a Health Canada authorized vaccine at least 14 days prior to entering the country.
And here she is on U.S. travelers coming to Canada.
But ahead of that date, on August 9th, a number of important changes at the border will come into effect to allow fully vaccinated United States citizens and permanent residents who are currently residing in the United States to enter Canada for non-essential purposes. The same requirements will apply. Travelers will have to be fully vaccinated with the Health Canada authorized vaccine at least 14 days before entering the country.
And on top of that, you know, as this is breaking news, a major update on kids traveling.
Today, I can confirm to families traveling with children under 12 that children will be exempt from quarantine, but they will still have to follow strict public health measures. This means they can accompany their parent or guardian out of the house to their destination, so long as they avoid group settings like summer camps, school, or childcare for 14 days.
So, a lot of breaking news here, right? We're looking at an upcoming date of August 9th. If you are from the United States or a permanent resident, come on in, double vaxxed 14 days prior, welcome. September 7th, international travel. You got two vaccines and you wait the 14 days, come on in. And as the health minister just said there, kids are exempt from that quarantine. You know, one thing I will add, what this does not tell us is whether Canadians can go down to the States. That restriction is still alive until the 21st. Now, we don't know whether it's going to be renewed. We don't know if it's going to be dropped. We don't know if it's going to be extended for a smaller duration of time. That information we don't have just yet. So those restrictions are set to last until two days from now, on the 21st. Perhaps, as we speculate on this show, this announcement today setting the stage for an update to what happens for us Canadians wanting to go down to the United States. So still no clarity on that. To help us react to this, I want to bring on Dan Kelly, President and CEO of the Canadian Federation of Independent Business. Dan, how's it going?
Hey, good afternoon. Good to be with you.
Dan, so we're reacting to a few things here. So I appreciate as we're all kind of play catch up to this breaking news. But from what you hear from Minister Haidu and perhaps from what you've been able to gather over the last couple of minutes, how does this sit with you? Where does this kind of rank in terms of these easing of restrictions? Is this going to do the trick or, you know, trend in the right direction?
Look, it is a big step to giving businesses and travelers a bunch of additional clarity that they just didn't have only a few short days ago. And that's what businesses have been asking for with respect to reopening, with respect to reopening the border. Tell us what on earth is the government intending to do so that we can at least plan for those various scenarios. It's still a ways off. August 9th isn't forever away. And that will help salvage a little bit of the tourism season, one hopes, for some operators. There are some Americans that are looking, eyeing anxiously to come to Canada and will, of course, be early adopters of the new border measures as they kick in on my birthday, August the 9th. But the big question, as you rightly noted, is that for Canadians looking to drive across the border, that remains an unanswered question. And we're hoping that now the Biden administration will answer that question in the next day or two. I just spoke to a business owner on the weekend that wishes to drive across the border to check out a facility there, but had no idea what he was in for in terms of getting access to the U.S. market. That could come now any day, given that Canada is out with its announcement. So it's good news, but answers many, not all, of the questions that are on the minds of business people and travelers.
Yeah, you know, Dan, just with your anecdote there, you kind of set up the stage for my next question, which was, you know, often us consumers, if I can call the bulk of us that, kind of forget that the border opening isn't just for the flow of people and capital for us to go to the mall, so to speak, or go, exchange our tourism dollars with their respective countries back and forth, Americans and us. But it's also how business people do business, you know, prospect new opportunities, figure out new markets, that sort of stuff. So to that particular point, you know, you've also kind of briefly touched on the timeline here. Is this quick enough? Or would you have preferred it a little bit quicker, both from the American as well as international perspective?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, August 9th isn't forever away, but it still does mean that we're going to miss out on some critical weeks for tourism operators. I was up on Manitoulin Island and for a week of holidays in late June, and the guy that runs the resort said that he has, I think, 40% of his tourists in the summer are Americans, But in the fall, it's 70% of his guests are Americans. And he said he already missed out on all of that last year. If he had another season where he missed out on that entirely, you know, he's not going to be able to make it. The fact that the announcement's coming this late, I mean, people don't make their vacation plans on a dime. They tend to plan them well in advance, especially if you're crossing an international boundary. So, yeah, this also has huge, huge ramifications for business traveler. And that is where I think there is a good opportunity. Downtown hotels are ghost towns. Even as Canadians are looking to pick up some of the slack of international tourists and head out to resorts and rural communities across the country, if you're looking to book a hotel room in Toronto, Montreal, Calgary, as I'm going next in a couple of weeks, there still are very few people taking up these spaces because they're often occupied by business travelers from abroad. And that we still haven't seen. So it is good news that as of September, we will see fully vaccinated foreigners and business people being able to come to Canada to take advantage of some opportunities this way. It is helpful news. From a vaccine perspective, though, one of the big incentives I know for sure to bump up Canada's slowing rate of vaccination adoption is likely to be the ability for a Canadian to drive across the U.S. border for a long weekend. And I suspect as soon as the Biden administration does that, if it is, in fact, for fully vaccinated Canadians, we may see some Canadians that have been hesitant to jump on the vaccine bandwagon do just that after that announcement is made. So we're looking forward for that companion announcement with which one expects any moment, perhaps any day.
Dan Kelly, President and CEO of the Canadian Federation of Independent Business. Thanks, Dan. I really appreciate this. Just for all those catching up before we go here today, August 9th, those in the United States and permanent residents, if you're double vaxxed, you can come to Canada. September 7th, international travelers, you can come to Canada if you're double vaxxed. Still don't know yet when Canadians can go down to the U.S., although we'd expect an announcement in the coming days. And finally, we know that kids are exempt from that quarantine restriction. And the government has also said, as we just understand, it will scrap the mandatory three-night stay of an assigned hotel room upon arriving to Canada. So a lot of breaking news, still a few pieces to figure out. We are going to be tracking this story well into the day on the iHeartRadio Talk Network across all properties. This is Zane Velji filling in for Evan Solomon. I will see you tomorrow. Have a good rest of your day.